Hello and welcome back to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. This is Becca Dukes-Kozak, and I love being able to come here and speak with you in regards to ways that we can empower ourselves and our communities and take control of our lives. And today is like no other. We are bringing more information that is going to be empowering to you in being able to create a more sustainable life, self-sustainable, actually. I am so excited to have with me a very dear friend, Karen Shepley, who has taken years of, you know, just kind of tinkering around in her garden and coming from a very technical career on a very big platform. She has been able to find awareness that goes beyond the walls of the computer room and the office that has helped her find her peace and actually a daily vacation. So as a West Coast native, she has lived in several different biomes, and she is taking her experience from those in growing. And she's done quite a bit of research and trying to figure out, you know, how to grow in her backyard. She is very passionate about getting the word out on how each of us can make a difference. In her research, she found that there was a gap in the marriage of what really makes home gardening successful. So Karen, welcome to Better by the Minute Life with Becca. I am so excited to have you here with us today. And please share with us a little bit about you, your career, what has sparked this interest in backyard gardening and becoming more self-sufficient with your food supply.
Thank you, Becca. I am so excited to be here, and I'm so excited to share this with your audience. So, about me, I've spent many, many years working on statewide and now nationwide projects to automate software systems to help make people's day job a little easier, a little better, and more efficient. I've enjoyed that. I enjoy the project lifestyle and the synergy that we have with the people working on the projects. And then I go home and I tend to my garden. And it's peaceful. I find it peaceful when I can hear the birds singing and hear the breeze through the trees, and it's just quiet. And you see the little lizards running around, or the butterflies and the bees and the hummingbirds and the ladybugs. And so I noticed all of that in my yard. And it was a couple years ago that I found the missing link. I don't know if I'd say it's the missing link, but where we can make one little change in our garden and have more abundant harvests.
So little changes. It doesn't take a lot, does it?
No, it's kind of like that light bulb moment. You know, your mind tries to figure things out, and it's like, oh, that's where, you know, it's you're passionate about your garden. You want to see things grow. You want to harvest the food. You want to bring it inside. You want to enjoy it, and you want to grow more. And yeah, it's a passion that I want to share with everyone, because we can all make a difference.
Well, and that passion has driven you to write a book, which
yes.
I have one of the first copies of here, Your Self-Sufficient Backyard Homestead Garden, A Beginner's Guide to Growing Food at Home and Creating a Sustainable Pollinator Garden with Abundant Harvests of Fruits and Vegetables. Karen, share with us to start. Backyard gardening, who is it for?
It's for all of us. I think it's a good question. We don't necessarily need to have a backyard. We can garden on our front porch in pots, on our back porch in pots. We can have a couple of square feet, and we can still fulfill that growing something, nurturing something. I forgot the question.
So who is it for? Gardening. We all eat. We don't all have green thumbs. And I love the fact in the book you talk about that and how you share different options to help us get over that black thumb.
Yes. Yes, it is simple. It's all knowledge. It's all knowledge. We can all garden. Our front porch on pots, our back patio. We don't have to have any certain size, a plot of land or anything. Buy one plant and nurture it and see how you can do. With a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of patience, we can all, everybody can backyard garden. Everybody can garden, whether it's just flowers or if you want to grow food too.
Absolutely. And we need to not forget, plants make oxygen. Oh. We need oxygen. There's this synergy between us and plants that without That's them, right. we don't exist.
That's, thank you.
I love the fact that you have taken your passion, you've put this beginner's guide together. No matter where you are, no matter how much space you have, it's possible that you can have and grow food at home.
Yes.
One thing that you start out with in your book is something that I haven't seen in any other gardening books. I do garden. I love gardening. It's like you said, you find peace in it. I do as well. But you start the book out with pollinators. Why are pollinators so important, and why did you start the book out with them?
Thank you. So I think this book is different in that I bring together the pollinators, their role in our garden. So it's not just gardening, not just pollinators. It's the two together, because I found a few years ago in growing my fruit trees out in the backyard that one year I had abundant harvest of my plums, my pear apples, my peaches. And then the next year, not so much. And just couldn't figure out what's the difference. And then, you know, thinking about it, it's like, oh, in Northern Nevada, we kind of have some cold springs. The trees are flowering. The pollinators are pollinating. And then we have a cold snap. And so I cover the trees overnight to save the blooms. And then it was so cold during the day, I didn't want to go out and take those covers off of the trees. Then the bees and the birds, they couldn't get to the flowers to pollinate them. So therefore I had less harvest that summer. And I put the two together, and it was a light bulb moment that is now my passion. Like I say, I don't see people bringing this together, and I lived it, I experienced it, I know it. This year, my plum tree was buzzing, my peach tree buzzing with all the pollinators. And because when you have all the different flowers to support them, you give them food, they give you food. So that's how it came about and why I want to put the word out, because we can all make a difference.
Now, through your research, there's something else that you had mentioned in regards to what could be the cause of reduced pollination, which then also affects your crops. Share with us a little bit about what you had found there.
Been hearing for years the bee population is, you know, declining, and then you read a little bit about that and you see butterflies are declining, and it's the whole, as you read in the introduction, all of the climate change and the pesticides. And then I was just reading last night on the UN.org, pollution in the air suppresses the aroma I'll say, of the flowers. The bees aren't like knowing where, you know, they're not knowing where to go to get their food. At first, I thought it was all the wireless. And I think that might have been, I don't know, I haven't researched that yet. If the all of our, you know, we're all wireless now. If those waves are interrupting their flight, but I haven't heard that so much lately.
Yeah, there's so much information out there, and it's hard to know factual or narrative. Now, in your book, you put a list of pollinators, and some of these things I didn't even identify as pollinators. So you list birds, bees, bats, flies, butterflies, moths, wasps, beetles, small animals. I mean, all of these different things that are considered quote unquote pests in the garden. So share with us, you know, why they're so important and maybe a little bit on what we can do to help support them.
Thank you. So, you know, even ants are pollinators.
I remember one year I had zucchini and just beautiful, beautiful blossoms, and ants were so abundant. I'm like, okay, how do I get rid of these ants without poisoning my food?
Right. So even speaking about ants, it's for all of these pollinators, if we provide a place for them, we provide their food with the plants, with, and then like the ants, you know, they need water too. The butterflies, the bees, they all need water. So we can provide them all of their needs. They will stick around. They will help us. The plants, we have pollinator loving plants is how I call them. Certain plants, bees like, certain plants, butterflies like, and it's also the shape of the flower. If the flowers are more open petal, then how else do I explain it? There's just, like I say, different shapes of flowers and different pollinators like different flowers, different.
Well, I know what butterflies, you know, I find the butterflies, because they have the mechanism that they can get deeper into a plant to pollinate, they go for the flowers that are more trumpet-like.
Yes.
And
as do the hummingbirds.
Exactly. And you mentioned hummingbirds being a pollinator. They go from flower to flower, you know, not just collecting food from them for themselves, but actually pollinating the flowers, doing some little cross-pollination and, you know, some little bit of socialization throughout the flowers that then helps create our food.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly it. That's the transfer. That's why even the little mammals are pollinators, because they brush by one and that pollen falls off on another. Some are self-pollinating or self-fertilizing, not a lot, but that's why all of these animals that we call pollinators are so important to provide what they need and their habitat. And even if it's just a specific area of the garden that's just for the leaf cutters, the little bees that want to eat your plants. And the more I read, you know, people that raise monarchs, they say that the caterpillars go through their plants like there's no tomorrow. So just supporting them supports us again in the end. I found if you look, you can see like on milkweed, if you turn the leaves over, you can look, if you know what to look for, you can see the little eggs. To me, that's really exciting. you know, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, you're providing a habitat for life here. So give them food, water, shelter, just like we need, is really rewarding.
I've seen where I've turned the leaves over and I see the little eggs and such, and I run through my mind, I wonder what those could be.
Right.
And there was a time where I'm like, oh no, you know, let's pick those off. Let's get rid of them.
Right.
And
right.
Like you said, with your trees and covering them up and not having the pollinators there, you got less yield in your harvest. And as I think back, I did too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's so much that is empowering that we can do.
True.
That society has, whether it's society, whether it's vanity, I don't know. But it's actually doing more harm than good when it comes to our food supply.
Yes. Yes. Another thing real quick is, even, you know, we want to clean up the leaf litter in the winter. We want to clean up, or we want to clean up in the spring. It's like, oh, I've had two or three sunny days. I want to get out and clean up my yard, but don't. We need a week of 55 degrees of a high before, let that week pass, hold back before you start cleaning up that leaf litter, because all of your pollinators, or a lot of your pollinators, are overwintering in there. I saw so many little bitty bees. I've never seen a bee so small this year, because I let my leaf litter, I just, nope, it's going to stay there. And, you know, when I'm walking my dogs, where are they sniffing at the most? All of the piled up leaves on the side of people's yards by their fence, you know, it's just interesting when you observe nature and how simple it is for us to help.
Well, and taking that time just to breathe it all in, look around, create awareness about what's going on that goes beyond, you know, just what the neighbors are doing. Or if for me, you don't have neighbors, you know, the car's going by, but enjoying what is in your surroundings. Yes. And then acknowledging what you can do to help support it. So in your book, you mention different plants that you can plant that are beneficial to pollinators. And I love that, because we want to attract those pollinators. And when we attract the pollinators to specific plants, not only are they pollinating our plants, whether they're flowers or fruits or vegetables, we're providing them the food source that they prefer, that then they're going to be drawn more to as far as eating, right? Rather than just hoarding on our food, which you had mentioned in the book, that you take that as a compliment. So share with us why you take those little bug nibbles as a compliment.
Well, we think, right. Because they're there, you're providing food for them that they want to eat. The little, you know, leaf cutters, they you see a little like perfectly round circle or half round on your leaf, and it is gone. And that's like, wow, I'm providing food for this little pollinator that is in turn helping provide more food for me. So rather than trying to have a perfect garden, thing is all healthy, which is great, but letting the pollinators eat on the plants is quite a compliment in that you're providing, like I say, their food. You're giving them nourishment.
Absolutely. And whenever you're providing them with the foods that they like, they're going to be healthier. Now, you also mentioned in there pesticides and herbicides.
Yes.
Another thing, you know, focusing on the pollinators, but also going through their life cycle. Mm-hmm. We see caterpillars, we see worms, you know, all these different things that are considered pests. When we see them, it doesn't always register what mm-hmm. that becomes mm-hmm. and how beneficial it is to us. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. share with us why you had that insight to include that in the book.
I think the pesticides, I've really always been against pesticides. It really came into my awareness 7 years ago with the health issue and how devastating pesticides are to our health. I see there's global things going on with commercial production of food and the pesticides, which harm the pollinators. 75% of food, the global food production is dependent on some type of animal pollination. That's 3 out of 4 bites of food that we are eating that is dependent on pollination. If pesticides are sprayed and the pollinators go to feed on that fruits, vegetables, flowers, that harms them. Their life is so short anyway that then they're going to die sooner. They're going to be unhealthy. They're
not going to do their job, which then their job is to pollinate, and plants need pollination so that we can have the food to eat.
It's all that life cycle, right?
It's pretty simple, but to think that killing off pests, which they're not pests, they're pollinators.
I've never thought of a caterpillar as a pest. I don't know why. And if you really look at, if you just go out and search for, you know, images of caterpillars, oh my goodness, you'd see some that you would just think were in a coloring book. You just think of a little green caterpillar. Oh no, they're like an otherworldly creature, almost, some of them.
Yeah, it's amazing. Creation, all the colors, everything was orchestrated for specific use. Their colors are picked for specific reasons.
That's true.
And it's not something that we as people, I believe, could have had the foresight to put together. Creation in general is just so phenomenal. And I love the fact that I'm able to enjoy it and now take the time to enjoy it, which mm-hmm. we are coming up on a break. So we do have to take a little bit of time and say thank you to RK at CO 1080 AM listeners for being here with us on Better by the Minute Live with Becca. We will be right back. coming to you with more empowering information on what you can do to have a self-sustained garden in your own backyard, porch, patio, kitchen counter. It doesn't matter. There are things that we can do that will help provide additional food that is non-toxic to us and also our little critters in our environment. So here I have with me Karen Shepley, the author of Your Self-Sufficient Backyard Homestead Garden, The Beginner's Guide to Growing Food at Home and Creating a Sustainable Pollinator Garden with Abundant Harvests of Fruits and Vegetables. Now, Karen, your book was just released and we can find it on Amazon, if I remember correctly. So just Amazon, but you also have a website. Share with us a little bit of information on how we can get a hold of you.
Hi, thanks, Rebecca. Myhomesteadgarden.com is my website. You can reach me there. And I do have a Facebook group. I love my Facebook group. They're wonderful people. Please join. We have a lot of good information in there. It is Homestead Gardening for Beginners. Learn to help our pollinators help us. So those are the two, myhomesteadgarden.com and Homestead Gardening for Beginners is my Facebook group.
Awesome. And I'm going to also include those on my website, betterbytheminutelife.com. If you go to guests, you'll be able to click on Karen's name and find out information and have those links available also. As I absolutely love being able to have non-toxic food sources. And that's something that we are sharing about now. And not all food is the same. Not all seeds, not all plants are created equal. Now, in your book, Karen, you refer to native seeds and plants. Share with us why it is important to choose native seed and plant options.
It really is important for us to choose native plants. What that helps with is one, they're native to the area, so they can withstand the extremes of heat and cold. They're going to have better longevity. They will attract the native pollinators, like the bees and the butterflies, when you have native plants. They will help you use less fertilizer and pesticides as well. And if you go out, like say you go out on a hike, I went out on a hike about a month ago in California, and it was amazing the wild plants and the wildlife because of the wild plants. But it was just like these don't need all of this wild flowers and plants don't need people to water them and fertilize them and prune them. And so it's just less care on our part as well.
And I like that because so many of us have so much going on that having something that takes a lot of time, a lot of care is just not feasible.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But it's not required when we use the native plants that are used to growing in our areas. And that brings me to the gardening zones. I know I moved to where I am from the desert, and the things that I was able to grow in the desert year round do not grow here.
That's right.
And you talk a lot about doing a year round garden in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Share with us a little bit without giving all the details. Share with us a little bit about what we can do that, because I want everybody to go get this book. I mean, there is so much information packed into this that is beginner basic, but even for somebody that has been gardening for a while, it's bringing up information that may have been forgotten.
Yes. Absolutely. I find that it's an easy read. I find that people are finding it enjoyable. And I also find that people that are been gardening and have, you know, twice or three times the space of gardening that I have and have been gardening longer are finding things that they didn't know. So, so for year round, you can start your seedlings inside, as people know. You can bring things inside towards the end of the season. So our in Northern Nevada, our growing season is about 6 months. I have in my companion planting chart, I have the harvest times, typical harvest times for it's for zone 9 or 10, I think, in California, but you can kind of back that up when you find out what your zone is. So different techniques that you can do, like citrus. You can't have citrus, my lemon, lime, clementine plant trees that I have. You have to slowly be bringing them inside. You have to, you know, they're in pots, and to get them pollinated and get them growing out in the sun, you bring them out in the sun, you know, in the summer, bring them in the winter, which is, you transition them. So there's ways to have food all year round from your garden, from your own hands growing it.
You can go to the garden center, and you recommended finding your local garden center. They usually have newsletters mm-hmm. that you can subscribe to that's going to help give you information about what and when to plant different foods. Now, when you are thinking about creating your own garden, what are some of the first things that you want to think about?
You want to think about the sunlight. How much sun do you have? How does the sun cross your yard or your patio, your porch? You want to think about the soil and how you can, what you're going to use for the soil, whether it's in the ground, a raised garden bed, or in a pot. And then what the native, again, it goes back to the native, what's going to grow best in your area.
One thing that I do know about natives is they're usually in the ground. So they're pulling nutrition from the ground that they are used to growing in.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now,
with food supplies, and the food that we eat, plants only need three things to grow: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Mm-hmm.
As humans, we need just a little bit more. Now, the minerals in the ground, depending on where the plants are being grown, minerals do not replenish themselves.
Mm-mm.
I think you have a way that you can replenish the ground with minerals so that our food can be even healthier for us when we eat it. And that's with the Bloomin' Minerals.
That's right.
Now, Karen, you had mentioned the companion plant chart just a bit ago, and I know that people can get their own copy of that and get instant access. If they go to your website, myhomesteadgarden.com, all one word, no spaces, no hyphens, just myhomesteadgarden.com, they will find where they can get their own copy and instant access to companion plant charts for fruits, vegetables, and pollinators. So I love the fact that you have that free giveaway to help people get started. And your book right now can be found on Amazon, as I mentioned before, but also you have a Kindle version that is only 99 cents through the month of April as a release special. Share with us a little bit about why you did that.
So I want people to enjoy reading this book. I want them to learn. I want them to find some passion about what they can do, whether they're growing food or just flowers. Makes no matter. Because there are some that like to only grow flowers and don't really care about the food. So I just encourage them to learn about the pollinators, learn what they need, provide them the environment, provide them the plants. And so a 99-cent special, a release special, is my way to please come on, join the community of everybody that's loving the pollinators and helping to bring them back, because they're so much in decline, the butterflies and the bees.
Part of that decline has to do with all of the wildfires, all of the natural disaster that has happened. I know the last 2 years, fires have been everywhere.
Yes.
And when you destroy that natural habitat, I know that things come back. I know that the fire, it burns, it creates that ash. That ash goes back down into the soil, but it takes time for it to create the habitat that it once did for those pollinators. In my mind, I think that gives us more of a responsibility to help bring back those pollinators, since our food supply is so dependent on pollinators.
Absolutely. Did you know that there is a plant called fireweed?
Yes.
And it's beautiful, isn't it? And it's the first thing that comes up after a fire. And so another beauty of nature to bring us something so beautiful after something so devastating. Absolutely. The more, you know, we can go out and help those deforested areas or the fire burn areas to plant trees, to plant the flowers that the pollinators need, will absolutely help us as well in the long run.
Most definitely. And when we think about it, those areas could be private areas, public areas that, you know, there's no trespassing on, which empowers us to be able to do more in our own space. And as you had mentioned before, it doesn't matter if you have a yard. You can do things in pots that then help create more habitat and vegetation and food for not only the pollinators, but for ourselves.
So that brings to mind, when you say this, is guerrilla gardening, which has just come into my awareness lately. And so if we take native wildflower seeds and create a little ball, like some mud and some compost or some good soil, and ball it up, let it sit out in the sun and harden, and then we can go out and we can throw those seed bombs, and they will naturally, with the sun and the rain and the moisture, they'll grow. You can grow a field of these wildflowers by just throwing a seed bomb or two. If you search guerrilla gardening and seed bombs, you know, separately, you'll find it's pretty cool. There's a lot of movements going out there. There's like bike-a-thons, like, what do you call it? A marathon, you know, they ride their bikes, and people are getting together in groups, making these seed bombs, giving it to the bike, you know, the people riding their bikes to go out and throw out the seed bombs on their journey, on their bike ride. So it's just things like that who knew?
When you said guerrilla gardening, I'm trying to think, how on earth? And then the creating little balls and throwing them, and then in the zoo seeing gorillas throw their own feces. I get it. I get it. And I've often wondered, because as I'm traveling and going along highways and seeing little patches of flowers and just really enjoying the beauty, the color along the highways, and thinking in my mind, the only way that could have gotten there for me to enjoy is if somebody took the time to spread those seeds.
Mm-hmm. Right. I have it, and it could be the wind as well, but how wonderful is that? I have one lone tulip in my backyard. I don't have tulips in my yard. My sister does next door. So it's just this one beautiful little tulip plant out, you know. Cities are doing this. Cities are replacing their greenscape with the native plants because they're saying, oh, I'm not going to have someone pay someone to mow this. I'm not going to have to pay to water it. So it's becoming a little more in the awareness of cities, of people here with your audience now, is what can we do? Just one little thing. Everybody does one little thing. It can help.
In your book, you also mention resources on where you can find native plants and native seeds. And I absolutely love the fact that you have included Canada, northern neighbor to the United States, and also the United Kingdom, who, where I am, you follow that latitudinal line, and they're right there. Some of the same gardening zones as we have in the United States, depending, of course, where you are in the United States. So I love the fact that you have made this book to be more well-rounded and not area specific.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have friends in both countries, or all three countries, US, UK, Canada. And in my research, I found that all of us are hungry. Our neighbors in Canada are just like us. Our neighbors in the UK are just like us. We're all hungry for information and want to do our part. So it was important for me to include our friends. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I was just thinking with the gorilla, going back to the gorilla gardening, is with the bloomin' minerals, you can incorporate those minerals into those plant seed bombs, which then would supply and spread more minerals.
Isn't that a fabulous idea? That I love that, Becca. Thank you.
Yes, I'm going to do that. Annuals, so that would mix right in. And as we're spreading those minerals, it's, you know, nutriating the ground, which then makes stronger pollinators because they've got stronger, healthier plants.
Yes.
To be able to feed on.
So how wonderful is that?
Helps us all.
Thank you.
Well, I thank you for putting together this book. I know so many people that are just getting started in buying their first homes and really having the awareness that our food supply is not providing the nutrition that it needs, and that there are things that we can do at home to create healthier food for ourselves, for our animals. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of people that are doing a raw food diet and including, you know, sweet potatoes and different nutrient dense vegetables in their pets food also. So not just for us, but it takes those healthy pollinators to make the food. So, anything else that we can discuss? Oh, when it comes to picking our seeds and our plants, I know in your book you mention non-GMO, chemical-free seeds and plants. You touched a little bit about that in the beginning of the program, but let's go a little bit deep. When we look at non-GMO, that's non-genetically modified organisms, why is that important?
Well, one, for our health, to for us to eat non-GMO, because genetically modified is not natural. It can cause, as I think you're very aware of, health issues. Our seeds need to be organic and non-GMO. Mostly the health issues is so important for us. I could go down that road here, but I won't.
That's a very windy rabbit trail, that's for sure, when it comes yes. to GMOs.
Yes.
I know, yes. like just with wheat alone, our wheat and our grains,
yes.
where genetic modification has been made, where it used to have a 3% gluten protein. And gluten is a protein, folks. It's a protein that our bodies were not designed to be able to process. And when you take something that had 3% by design and you modify it so that it's 18%, so that you get bread that's more dense and chewy and all those addictive parts to bread that we are drawn to, the body can't process that protein. We really want to focus on the foods that we were designed to be able to take in. And that includes starting at the seed and choosing those non-GMO, non-hybridized seeds options and plant options that are closer to nature. I think you agree.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. The wheat, and I'm passionate as well about the corn.
We can go into corn. We can go into soy. I think one that is an all-time favorite are tomatoes. I mean, tomatoes have been hybridized so much to have short growing seasons, specific colors, specific textures. I myself, prior to, you know, even thinking about native in my garden, I have been so focused on doing heirloom, staying Wonderful. Away from those genetically modified. Yes, they're going to have a little bit longer growing season, but when they have more flavor, I can't believe the taste difference in choosing something that goes back to the way it was originally designed.
How wonderful.
That heirloom varieties. And you can find them in almost all vegetables and fruit using heirlooms in addition to the natives. I yes. love how you pointed out natives, they're used to growing in that area without human intervention. They're used to the natural water supply that is there, the ground that is there, sunlight, the lack of sunlight.
Absolutely. Yes, the native. And it's kind of boggles the mind a little bit when you think native, so I need to buy local. But when you look at some of the resources for each country in the book, they have native seeds and plants that you can purchase from, you know, from back east where I'm out in the west. So it's like I say, it boggles the mind a little bit, but if it's native, it's native. And the resources were in the book were researched very well, are very reputable companies, and I've used, I'd say, all of them at one point or another, except those in the UK or Canada. But again, those they've all been researched and are very reputable companies.
Share with me, Karen, what is your favorite pollinator?
Oh, do I have to choose one? I go between the butterfly and the bee and the hummingbird. I mean, you know, we all love to put out our hummingbird feeders, and it's so important to keep them clean into the right ratio. I use 1 cup sugar to 3 cups water, but do you know if we have enough native wildflowers in our garden, we don't need the feeders? A really exciting idea to me. And then it's like, wow, I don't need those hummingbird feeders because they're getting it natural. Anyway, so like I say, I just, Becca, if I had to choose one, maybe the mason bee, because they're the early risers in the spring and they work so much harder and they stay local.
So I was doing a homeschooling project with my son and we were looking at bees. And I was amazed to find how many native bee varieties there are. We even made native bee hotels using different size sticks and bamboo and straw and stuff to provide them with a place that they could live and a habitat. It was such a fun project. But The biggest eye opener was some of those things that look like flies are native bees. It was incredible. It was like hundreds of different varieties of native bees that you would think are flies.
That was fun.
That was really fun. I really enjoyed that. It really was an eye opener. That's something that folks, we just need to stop from our busy lives.
Yes.
And enjoy.
Yes.
Enjoy. And yes. See what we can do to add to creating a better by the minute life.
Yes.
For ourselves and our families.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate you so much. And I love the fact that I'm able to help you promote your book and make it available to others. Your Self-Sufficient Backyard Homestead Garden by Karen Shepley. And that's Shepley. You can find it on Amazon. In addition to the special that is going on right now, the 99-cent Kindle version. Thank you for making that available, Karen. And I encourage all of you to go to her website, get your free copy, instant free copy of Companion Plant Chart for Fruits, Vegetables, and Pollinators at myhomesteadgarden.com. And if you're on social media, get in the group, like her group, and follow along with information that she will be sharing there with the same name, My Homestead Garden. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us on Better by the Minute Life with Becca. I am Becca Dukes. Check out my website at betterbythemintelife.com, where you will be able to get the information that we shared in this program and click on it. I'm also going to include a link to those blooming minerals that you can add to your garden and even create those gorilla bombs to help spread nutrition throughout the land and create a more beautiful place around you. Bye for now.